Hall of Mirrors, tales of horror and the grotesque, written and performed for podcast by Mike Bennett. This podcast is intended for an adult audience. Hello, listeners, and welcome for the last time in this volume to the Hall of Mirrors. Should we think of podcasts in terms of volume or seasons as they do on television? I know some of my podcasting peers opt for seasons, though whichever word we use, of course the idea is much the same. A bunch, a bundle, a bouquet of stories. I like that. This has been a bouquet of stories from me to you, and I hope you've enjoyed them. If you've really enjoyed them, then do please re-gift them. Tell someone about them. Burn them onto a disc, or just send a friend the URL by email. I'll talk to you more about the end and future of the podcast after the conclusion to this story, Poacher's Cottage. So keep listening after the curtain comes down on Ken Chase and Friends. Welcome again, listeners. As you can see, I've hung a heavy black velvet curtain after the sixth mirror in the hall. What lies beyond, only I can know for now. It's a shame, isn't it? But I have plans, listeners. Plans for more stories, for other podcasts, and even, dare I say the N-word, a novel. There, it's out. My Dirty Secret. That's not the title of the book, though you could be forgiven for thinking it might be. Anyway, here we are, the shimmering entryway to Poacher's Cottage. Last time, we met Ken Chase, an estate agent with a passion for property that knows no bounds. For example, you may recall, despite knowing all about the history of Poacher's Cottage, of the deaths and more deaths, and the ghosts that supposedly haunt the place, Ken sold the cottage to a couple called the Colliers and told them absolutely nothing about the house's history. A year later, and the Colliers were found dead, gassed in the kitchen of Poacher's Cottage. Strange? Uncanny? Not for Ken. For Ken, it's just a matter of coincidence. Nothing to get excited about. But when the late Mr. Collier's brother, Richard, phoned Ken from Canada, wishing to sell the place on again, that was something to get excited about. For just as Ken and Jim had jokingly predicted a year before, Poacher's Cottage was again returning to the window of Ken Chase Properties. And as the glass settles this week, we find ourselves behind that same window. Look, here comes Ken now, ready to open up at the start of another hard day's estate agency. And look, there on the doormat, his post. I wonder if among that little bundle there lies the key to unlock the rest of our tale. The key to Poacher's Cottage. The next morning, Ken opened the door to the office and bent down to pick up the post. Besides the usual assortment of mail and circulars, there was a plain, unmarked white envelope. Ken separated it from the rest of the mail. It held something small and flat. He smoothed the envelope between his finger and thumb and smiled as he felt the unmistakable shape of a key. It had to be Collier's, most likely dropped off by his solicitor sometime yesterday evening. Ken considered his schedule for the day ahead. He should be able to get out to the cottage later on today. It'd be interesting to see what the Colliers had done to it over the past year, before they... The thought stalled in his mind. He cleared his throat and looked out of the window at the high street that was gradually coming to life outside. Then he found himself humming an amorphous melody that gradually became "This Old House." Shakin' Stevens danced into the centre of his mind, replacing the coldness that had been uncoiling there a moment before. He looked at his watch.
"Yes, just after lunch should be a good time for that little visit," he said, and tossed the mail onto his desk.
Then he picked up his mug from beside his keyboard. It still held some dregs of tea and biscuits from yesterday. He swirled them around and started whistling "This Old House" as he went off in the direction of the kitchen to put the kettle on. At just after 2 p.m, the stillness of the afternoon outside Poacher's cottage began to resonate with the distant bassline of Level 42's Lessons in Love. The song grew louder, slowly smothering the birdsong and the chirruping of grasshoppers, as the Range Rover that bore the blaring 80s compilation drew nearer. It finally drew up outside, slowing down and easing onto the grass verge in front of the cottage. Ken took off his sunglasses and looked out of the open driver's window at his now reacquired cash cow. He smiled, switched off the engine, and got out. The peacefulness of the cottage's setting struck him immediately. The sounds of nature, strange to his urban ears, ebbed through the shimmering summer haze. He took a few steps back, allowing himself a good view of the property. In their short tenure, the colliers had evidently been very busy out here. Even at a glance, Ken could see that the place had been much improved. The hedge, which last year had been growing out of control, was now cut back and squared off at chest height, making it possible to see the front garden. Last year, this too had been overgrown, and he'd had to make excuses to people who came to view the house, saying it was a wild garden. But now, there'd be no need for any excuses. The mowed lawn and newly dug flowerbeds spoke for themselves. Ken pushed open the little wooden gate and started down the path. He looked at the flowerbeds and imagined the colliers tending them, wiping the sweat from their brows, then stopping for tea or maybe a glass of lemonade. He could see them smiling at their work, loving their home. It wasn't an image that sat comfortably with their later suicide pact. Ken shook his head and fished the key from his pocket. The front door shone with a recent coat of red paint, and next to it, at eye level, a little hand-painted sign had been fixed that read, "Poacher's Cottage." The skin on the back of Ken's neck prickled. He didn't like the sign, even though there was nothing tacky or offensive about it. Then he realized that it wasn't the sign that was making him feel uncomfortable, but the name itself. The sign would lead to questions that he had no desire to answer. They should rename the place and bury its gruesome past once and for all. He made a mental note to have the sign removed, pushed the key into the lock, and opened the door. Inside, he was again struck by the amount of work the colliers had done. All the old hall carpeting had been torn up, and the floorboards fully restored. The walls of the hall had been painted white, and pictures of the colliers and other people, presumably family and friends, now hung at regular intervals along its length. Ken looked at one of the pictures of the couple smiling out from one of the prints. It was a strange business, all right. You never knew what fate might have in store around the corner. He wandered through into the kitchen and looked at the cooker. Its door was, of course, closed. Just a clean, white kitchen appliance waiting to be used. Again, Ken felt the skin at the back of his neck prickle, and he turned to look out of the window into the back garden. Like the front garden, it had been lovingly tended, and the blossoms of myriad flowers now blazed in the sunshine. He glanced back at the cooker and sniffed. Could he smell gas, or was that just his imagination? Suddenly, from upstairs, came the sound of a door slamming shut. Ken jerked around towards the hall behind him. Hello? Nothing stirred but the motes of dust drifting through the sunlight. It had to be a window open upstairs, probably left that way to keep the place aired by... He wanted to finish by an estate agent, but realized he couldn't. But it had to be an open window, and his opening of the front door had created a draught. Yes, that was it. It was a perfectly logical explanation. And yet he found he couldn't seem to move from the spot. Come on, Ken, he said aloud. You have to check this out. An open window can lead to rain damage. Then what a bloody great puddle in the middle of the master bedroom, do we? He forced a carefree chuckle, more for his own sake than for any potential prowlers that might be lurking upstairs, and started for the hall. He walked around to the foot of the stairs and looked up to the landing above. Feeling slightly foolish, he called, "Hello?" There was no reply, so he added the requisite, "Is anybody there?" He listened. Somewhere in the house, a clock ticked. He took a deep breath and began to climb the stairs, one step at a time. He walked with heavy steps, making his footfalls as audible as possible in order to warn anyone who might be hiding, however unlikely that was, that he was coming. When he reached the landing, he looked around. All the doors facing onto the short hallway stood closed. There was no way of knowing which of them had just banged shut. He checked the window at the top of the stairs. It was securely fastened. Then he turned and looked down to where the hallway ended in deep shadow. The door there was almost in darkness. He felt suddenly, inexplicably, afraid. He managed another carefree chuckle, though it sounded a little less carefree than the one earlier. Don't be ridiculous. He turned to the door nearest him and laid his hand on the brass doorknob. Immediately, he drew it back again. It was cold. Jesus, it was like ice. But this was July. And yet it really was cold up here, much colder than downstairs, which he now realized had been pretty cool as well. Damp? He sniffed and touched the wall. No, it had to be that open window. Find the window, close it, that'll be the end of the cold. He grasped the doorknob and opened the door. Inside was a bedroom. It was in keeping with the traditional style that the Colliers had applied throughout the house. A double bed filled most of the room. The headboard against the far wall was bordered on either side by two small tables, each with its own little reading lamp, and one with a telephone. Was it the master bedroom or a guest room? He couldn't remember exactly. He went over to the window. It was locked. He checked it for draughts, but there were none. Reluctantly, he turned to continue to the next room when the telephone rang. Ken looked at the phone as if it were a thing suddenly materialized from another world. Who the hell could be phoning here? A friend of the Colliers who hadn't heard the bad news? Or maybe it was for him, the office calling about something perhaps. No, they'd call his mobile. The phone continued to ring. Ken decided he may as well answer it. After all, he had every reason to be there. He walked over and picked up the receiver.
Hello?
For a moment, all he heard was a hiss. Then a voice came through, distant and vague.
Mr. Chase, how good of you to drop by.
Ken recognized the caller as Richard Collier. He felt some of his tension leave him.
Oh, Mr. Collier, how are you? I've just arrived here at the cottage not 5 minutes ago. Did the office tell you I was here?
No, I haven't contacted your office.
Oh, well, just good timing then, said Ken with professional cheeriness.
No, Mr. Chase, I saw you arrive.
The line hissed quietly in his ear for a moment as Ken tried to make sense of what the man was saying.
I'm sorry, Mr. Collier. Did you say you saw me arrive?
That's right. We all saw you arrive.
Ken suddenly felt a sense of unease rising through him like cold water.
We?
Yes, we. Myself, my wife, and the others.
Ken suddenly felt the need to sit down. He lowered himself slowly onto the bed.
But you're in Canada, Mr. Collier. You can't possibly have seen me.
Oh, I'm afraid that was something of a little lie, Mr. Chase. You see, I'm not in Canada. And I'm not Richard Collier. In fact, there is no Richard Collier. We made him up.
You...
Ken struggled to comprehend.
Well, who are you? Where are you?
Why, I'm downstairs. I'm talking to you from the phone in the lounge. And we've met before. I'm surprised you don't recognize my voice. We spoke so often last year when you sold us this house.
The receiver slipped from Ken's hand and landed softly on the bed, though the speaker was still just audible.
My name's Evan Collier, Mr. Chase.
No,
Ken whispered.
Yes, you remember me surely. We got to be quite friendly at one stage. At least, I felt that was the case. But perhaps it was just a professional courtesy on your part. You told us so much about this place. Everything, in fact, except that it was haunted.
No!
Ken got unsteadily to his feet. This is a joke! He felt reassured as he heard himself denying the man.
You're trying to scare me, Collier! Phoning from Canada or wherever you are, playing some kind of a sick prank? Well, what the hell for? To get some kind of pathetic revenge? Well, it won't work, you hear?
He grabbed the receiver and shouted into it.
You hear me, Collier?
The dial tone buzzed quietly in his ear. Ken slammed the receiver back onto its cradle and gave a loud, contemptuous laugh.
Thought you'd scare me, eh? Oh, well, you got that wrong, didn't you, mate, eh?
Then he heard a footstep on the stairs. It was precise and deliberate, just as his own footsteps had been earlier as he sought to warn away any imaginary prowlers. Another step sounded, then another. Ken stared wide-eyed through the open door to where the stairs rose to the landing. The footfalls carried loud and clear as they grew unmistakably nearer.
Who's there?
Shouted Ken. He got to his feet and took a few steps closer to the door.
It's me, Mr. Chase. Evan Collier.
The voice was the same as the one on the phone. But now it wasn't filtering through the hiss of time and distance. It was coming from the stairs.
No,
said Ken.
That can't be! That can't...
His voice trailed off as he saw a man rising slowly into view on the stairs, his face turned down as he came up, his sandy hair parted at the side and going slightly thin towards the crown. Ken recognized the hairstyle immediately. Hadn't he just seen it a short while earlier in the photographs downstairs? A wig. It's someone in a wig. Jim. Ken heard himself laughing.
Oh, very good, Jim. You had me going there for a minute, mate. You fucking...
Ken's words dried up in his throat as the man on the stairs stopped and looked up at him. It was Evan Collier. A guttural whine sputtered from Ken's throat.
No!
This isn't a place for the living, Mr. Chase, said Collier as he came up the few remaining stairs. He doesn't like to be disturbed. Ken took a step back. He opened his mouth and managed to whisper,
Who are you talking about?
The poacher. You see, this is his cottage. No one else may live here. My wife and I couldn't have known that, but you knew, didn't you, Mr. Chase?
No!
Ken shook his head and continued to back away.
No! I didn't know! I didn't know!
But you did, said Collier as he came into the room. They know you did. They've told us all about you.
What?
Ken suddenly felt one of the night tables against the back of his thighs.
Who are you talking about? Who are they?
The others. The others who have died here, and who still remain. Ken shook his head emphatically.
Oh, this isn't happening! This isn't real!
He felt his way around the wall, stumbling past Collier and out to the top of the stairs, ready to descend in a headlong plunge to the front door, when, instead, he froze. At the bottom of the stairs, Collier's wife stood looking up at him. He had forgotten her name until yesterday when the newspaper story jogged his memory. It was Jane. She smiled faintly at him, as if she had heard her name in his thoughts. Beyond Jane Collier were others. Ken couldn't see them clearly as they were further back in the lower hall. As if taking their cue, they began to move towards the stairs. Ken looked again at Jane Collier. She was walking up the stairs towards him now, the faint smile still playing on her lips.
No,
Ken whispered. You can't sell this place again, Mr. Chase, said Collier, coming out of the bedroom. We won't let you.
No!
Ken screamed. He turned from the stairs and made to run to the door at the opposite end of the hall. But he stopped as he saw the door handle turning.
Who could be?
The door began to creak open, and from behind it, a darkness began to pour into the hall like smoke. Ken sagged against the wall, groping for a door handle, an escape, but unable to take his eyes from where the far door now yawned wide onto a room that seemed to hold nothing other than a living, pulsating darkness. Ken stared, certain now that he must have gone mad, as the darkness began to coalesce and reach out into the hall. It was like a shaft of black smoke, wavering unsteadily. Then it struck the doorframe, scraping against the paintwork. It was solid. It swayed out again, rising to point at his face. Ken stared at the twin black barrels of a double barrel shotgun and shook his head.
No!
His hand found a doorknob and tried to turn it, but it wouldn't move. Behind him, he could hear the stairs creaking under the weight of others approaching. Ken watched as beyond the barrels of the gun, a shape began to form in the blackness. It shuffled unsteadily forwards, the gun swaying before it like a blind man's cane. A man shape emerging, but incomplete. Ken turned and grabbed the door handle with both hands. He twisted it savagely in either direction, but it wouldn't open. Fuck! He couldn't look away from the door. He had to focus on it because it was real. And what was coming out of that far room couldn't be real because it didn't have a head. It didn't have a fucking head. Open! Ken screamed. He threw his shoulder against the door. Open, you fucking bastard! The door crashed open, and he fell into the room. He spun around and snatched at the door, falling against it and slamming it shut. He pressed himself flat against it, braced for the assault. He listened for the sounds of the gathering dead, but all he could hear was his own heart hammering against the wood.
Oh, please! In the name of God, leave me alone! Please! I won't sell it, I promise you! Kalia! I won't sell it!
There was no reply. Ken shifted around so his back was to the door. He was in a child's room. A cot that looked brand new sat in the middle of the floor. Several cuddly toys stared at it from where they had been arranged against one wall. They too looked new, as though they had never been played with. Ken looked at the door handle. There was no lock. He needed something to wedge against it. He reached out and managed to grab the cot. He dragged it over and shoved the headboard tightly beneath the handle. As he did so, he felt the temperature of the door begin to drop. Then there came a light knock upon it.
Fuck off!
Screamed Ken. There was a thump against the door, followed by another. Then the door began to rattle and shake as many hands began to fall against it. Ken turned and ran to the small sash window. It was locked. He cursed as his trembling fingers scrabbled at the catch. It was stiff, but he managed to twist it open. He pushed up on the lower window, but it wouldn't move.
Come on! Come on, you fucking bastard!
He pushed and hammered at the frame with the heels of his hands, but the window was fixed fast.
Fuck!
He screamed, trying to block out the hammering and rattling behind him. He pulled down at the top window, but it was as unyielding as the lower. Then he heard the cot scraping slowly against the floorboards.
No!
He couldn't look behind him. He took a step back from the window and kicked at the lower pane, shattering it in an explosion of glass and broken wood. He wrapped one of the curtains around his fist and began punching out the remaining shards of glass from the framework. Behind him, he heard the cot scraping faster now as it was pushed back and the door began to open. Still, he didn't turn back. He thrust his head outside and looked down. Directly below was a garden shed. His heart soared. It was only a short drop. He could do it easily. Jane Collier spoke softly, almost musically behind him.
Oh, you found the baby's room, Mr. Chase.
Ken glanced back to see the woman entering. He noticed for the first time the rounded shape of her belly beneath the long cotton dress she wore. She smiled and ran her hand over her swollen middle.
I can still feel him kicking, Mr. Chase. Would you like to feel? Just here.
For the first time, Ken realized he was crying when he heard his piteous reply.
No. Please,
No.
He felt a weakness pulling him down as he saw other fingers clasping and pushing at the door.
You can't leave, Mr. Chase, said Jane Collier.
No,
Ken sobbed, shaking his head and turning to the broken window.
I gotta go.
He bent forwards and grabbed the windowsill. He could hear the others coming in behind him. Then he felt a light, icy touch fall upon his neck, and he screamed. He launched himself out of the window. The broken glass teeth still in the frame tore at his shirt and flesh as if the house were trying one last time to snare him. But it failed. He fell. He was free of them. As the shed roof rushed up to meet him, a feeling of euphoria sang in his heart, and for the briefest moment, he laughed. He had won. It was nearly sunset when Jim pulled up outside Poacher's cottage. When he saw Ken's Range Rover parked on the grass verge outside, Jim felt his bowels turn to ice. He'd been desperately hoping that Ken was off down a pub somewhere getting drunk, that maybe he'd switched off his phone, or perhaps he had it on silent mode and didn't know it was ringing. But that was impossible. Ken never switched the phone to silent mode, and he always answered it, provided he was able to. At first, when Ken hadn't come back to the office that afternoon, Jim and Lindsay had made jokes about how the ghosts at Poacher's cottage had probably chased him up a tree. They'd called him, but he hadn't answered, so they'd called his home. Maureen had answered. She sounded drunk, but she was able to confirm that Ken hadn't returned home since leaving for work that morning. That was when the jokes had stopped. They'd rung the other clients that Ken had scheduled for attention that afternoon, but no one had seen him. Jim got out of his car and looked at the cottage. The dark windows looked back at him across the gathering shadows in the front garden. Jim raised his hands to either side of his mouth and shouted,
Ken!
There was no reply.
Ken! You still there, mate?
Some birds were singing, but otherwise all was silent. Jim cracked his knuckles and pushed open the garden gate. The sun was setting behind the house, and as he walked up the path and into shadow, Jim felt a distinct drop in temperature. It was enough to cause him to stop and call again.
Ken!
He looked at each of the windows in turn, hoping to see a sign of life flicker behind one of them. Then he realized there were other things he might see, and so he reached into his pocket and took out his mobile phone. He selected Ken's number from the address book and called him. He pressed the phone to his ear, and after a moment, he heard the call connect. At the same time, in his other ear, distant yet distinct, he heard a phone start ringing. Jim held his phone away from his head and listened. He hung up. The ringing stopped. He phoned Ken again. The ringing resumed.
Oh, shit! Ken!
Jim cried out. He began to move, following the sound of the ringing phone around the side of the house.
Ken!
It grew louder until finally he rounded the corner of the house and saw the shed. The ringing was coming from inside.
Ken?
Jim saw the hole in the roof. Broken timbers slanted into it at crooked angles, and shattered tiles lay all around. He looked up to the smashed window above the shed.
Oh, fuck! Ken!
Jim found himself suddenly running towards the shed. He yanked the door open, and more tiles fell through the gloom, either clattering down onto the floor or landing softly on the body that lay twisted beneath the yawning hole in the roof. Somewhere on the body, Ken's telephone was ringing. Jim hung up, and the shed fell silent. He stepped inside.
Oh, fuck. Ken. Oh, no, mate.
Jim reached out a tentative hand toward the garden fork that jutted awkwardly from Ken's body, then stopped. Ken's dead eyes were staring at the fork, his face frozen in an expression of horrified disbelief. Then Jim was staggering backwards and out of the shed. He turned and ran back around to the front of the house. In a moment he was down the path and out of the gate, scrabbling with his car keys a moment before he realized he hadn't locked it.
Shit!
He yanked the door open and fell into the driver's seat, jamming the key into the ignition and starting the car. He slammed it into gear and floored the accelerator. Clots of grassy earth flew from under the wheels as the car roared out and onto the road, careening left and right before straightening up and speeding away. Away from Poacher's cottage. Away from whatever had driven Ken out of the window. And away from that garden fork. Because no matter how he'd fallen through that shed roof, there was no way he could have fallen onto the fork, rolled over, and then rammed its prongs down into the floor beneath him. No way in hell. Ken. While the police and ambulance services may take his body away, I feel Ken will be staying on at Poacher's cottage, if only in spirit. He wanted to be reunited with Poacher's cottage every year, and now he can be. In fact, they'll always be together. A happy ending in the Hall of Mirrors.